Welcome to Career Tours. This week, how to answer the question, what's the lowest salary you'll take? The questions this cast answers are, what do I say to a recruiter when they ask me what the lowest salary I'll take is? How do I describe my lowest possible salary? And how do I avoid risk when talking about salary?
If you're thinking about interviewing anytime soon, now is the time to start preparing. Interviewing is not about smarts. It's not about personality. It's all about preparation in the modern age, as more and more companies use more and more tools to separate the wheat from the chaff. Our interviewing series is over 50 podcasts that go through in detail every step of the interview, how to prepare, how to dress, resumes, cover letters, how to chit-chat, how to answer tell me about yourself and your leadership style and significant accomplishments with repeated examples, how to close, how to ask questions, how to follow up, everything in enormous detail because we know interviewing for most people is a black box. Come and check it out.
So recruiters ask a lot of questions that can be predicted, like, what do you want to do? Where do you want to do it? What have you been doing? Sometimes they ask thorny questions, questions where you think that there's a right answer, but you're not really sure what the right answer is. And this is one of those questions. What's the lowest salary that you'll take? And in this guidance, we'll give you what to say and what not to say and why when you're answering this tricky question. Kate, can you do the outline for us?
Absolutely. First, we're going to talk about how to state your lowest amount. The second point here is accept the risk. And our third point is that the recruiter has reasons for this question.
So state your lowest amount. And this comes back to the whole, if somebody asks you a direct question, give them a direct answer. If you're asked for a number, then you have to give a number. It's a bit like the guidance we give for GPAs. If you ask your GPA, the answer is not, well, I had to work, or I had to take some time off, or there was Hurricane Katrina. The answer is a number. And you can talk about all the contributing factors afterwards, but you have to give the number first, because otherwise the recruiter's thinking, yes, and what I really want to know is the number. And they're not really listening to what your explanation is. So it's in your interest to give a number first and the explanation afterwards.
When you start out with all the reasons, it sounds like you're making excuses, which in my experience kind of preps the person who's listening for something less than stellar. And that's not really the way you want to go. You want to give your answer right up front, and then you can talk about it afterwards. But giving a list of reasons and all those things, we do that because we feel an emotion about the number we're about to give. But it's still just a number. It's still just a piece of data to the recruiter. And so we want to give that number, give them the data that they need, and then the data that we want to give is secondary because we are really there to give the recruiter the information they need so that they can help us and help the hiring company that they're working for.
And unless you're working or wanting to work on Wall Street or some highly competitive management consultancy firm, or there are some other highly competitive graduate schemes, the vast majority of the time, the difference between 2.5 and 3 or 3.5 and 4 really isn't that much of a deal. So I think graduates worry about that too much. But that isn't the topic. So we'll get back on topic. So we've seen people saying that they have been asked this question, what's the lowest salary you'll take? It seems to have become increasingly frequent. But every time we've seen it, it is a recruiter asking and not a hiring manager. As far as we can tell, and in my experience, this has never happened, hiring managers don't say, what's the lowest you'll take, and then offer you that money. This is happening before that process, when you're working with recruiters and they are trying to find jobs that are appropriate to you. And, you know, to say what's the lowest salary you'll take is awkward and inept. And if they just don't introduce it and they just say, okay, what's the lowest you'll work for? It sounds insulting and as if they're trying to get you to your lowest number.
Right. But that's not what they're doing, right?
Mm-hmm.
For them, it's again, it's just a piece of data that helps them to determine what kind of job, what kind of role that you're looking for. It's not something that determines your final answer. It's just how they decide what to present to you and how they decide how to present you to the hiring manager.
It's exactly like looking for vacations. When you go to the website and you have an idea of how much you want to pay for any one vacation, and it says, do you want to pay, you know, less than $500, $500 to $1,500, $1,500 to $3,000, $3,000 to $1,000,000, you want to be able to pick one of those because you don't want to see the ones that are $3,000 to $1,000,000 if you've only got $500. That's what recruiters are doing. They're salespeople. They don't ask questions that they don't need the answers to, because in sales, like everywhere else, time is money. It's just more direct that time is money in sales. And so the answer is just to state a number that is the bottom of the range that you were going to ask for. So if they'd have said, what's the range of compensation that you would accept? You would have had a bottom number. You would have said between 20 and 25, or between 105 and 110. So you're not really giving them any piece of new information. You're just telling them the two pieces of information separately. What's my the bottom of my range and what's the top of my range?
Yeah, we're just telling them something that they need to know. And it's not just about salary, right? Because for the right job, and I hear this all the time, for the right job, a lot of us would do a lot of things. So it's not just about salary. It's about, where is the job located? And is this job close to your heart? Is it something that you're just really dying to do? This is just one piece of the puzzle. So they're asking you a question that will help them to categorize your efforts, your placement. And there are still more things to consider. So when we give this answer, we're not saying this is it, right? We're just giving them a piece of data. So we can feel strong about the number, and we can say the number up front, just the number. And then if you really feel that you have to say some more words, if you really feel like you need to add in some things there, you can say, I would consider exceptional opportunities or other opportunities which didn't fall into this range or meet this range that had other benefits or had other benefits, something like that. You can caveat your answer because it's not the only consideration.
It's just a direction.
Yeah, and it just is emotional for a lot of us, right? And that makes sense. I mean, people have to feed their families and pay their mortgages. And so these kinds of questions, and it's not often that you get asked this kind of question. So it's emotional and it's something we don't often deal with. So it can be hard for us. But the answer is just to state the amount. Just state the number. And then if you really want to caveat it, you know, you can say, I would consider exceptional opportunities that don't fall in that range or had other benefits, in order to kind of to make sure that the recruiter knows. Really, it's about that number, and it's about answering the question with your lowest number.
Yeah. I was looking for an out of the job I was in when I took the job with Manager Tools. And if somebody had asked me then what my lowest number was, I would have given them one. But then I came to work for Manager Tools and I took a like 75% pay cut, because I really wanted to work here. And if anybody had asked me if I'd have worked for that amount, I'd have said no, because that wasn't my lowest amount in my head until it was Mark on the phone saying, hey, will you work for us? In which case, I was like, yeah, I'll pay you to work for you.
I'm sure it doesn't surprise people that Mark could do that, but I did the exact same thing. I took a pay cut as well. And when the job that I was leaving asked me if they could adjust my compensation to entice me to stay, I said no. So for the job that you really want, or the job that, you know, brings you closer to your family, for whatever reason it is, we all have other reasons, there are adjustments we all make. Isn't that funny? Gosh.
It is, and funny that we're such good examples. Although I have to make clear that we are both paid sufficiently well now. We're made up, so
yes.
Don't worry about us being poor. You don't need to send us like food blankets, food parcels or anything.
No, we're fine. We're well fed and happy. Yeah.
So one of the reasons people worry about giving a number is because going first has risk. So if you say, I'll work for 20,000, that's the bottom of my range, and the company was going to offer 25, and they offer 20 because you say that's the lowest number, then you've lost out on $5,000 a year. And that's the risk that most people think of when we talk about this question, and the risk that most people worry about when they're thinking about being asked the question. But there's a whole bunch of other risks that you're not thinking about that could be bigger, and you can mitigate this risk as well. So we're going to talk a little bit about risk first.
I think that part of a little bit about this is, again, we have an emotional connection to this answer, to this response. And keep in mind that the recruiter does not. And we're looking for a job. You know, part of that is that we have nothing until we have an offer. And so we need to accept a little bit of risk here and kind of do what's best to get an offer, right? Do what's best. And part of that is accepting the risk, being a little bit comfortable with the fact that, you know, the entire process here, looking for a job, searching, is always a little risky. And so this is just another piece of that risk. That's the way I think of it. It's just another piece of that risk that you have to get a little comfy with, right? Just feel a little more comfy with it, because you're looking for something here and you're already in a situation where things aren't perfect. So, you know, it's kind of a thing where you need to think about the risks that are involved, and we're talking about those now, but also you need to think about it from the other side, right? From the recruiter side, and have a logical approach that's helpful to your end game as opposed to an emotional response. So yeah, there's a risk that you'll overprice yourself and that maybe your number is a little too high. You know, the company can't afford that.
Better to find out now, though, right? Than go through weeks of interviews.
Yeah, you have to work so hard to interview, too. Especially if you're following our guidance, it's not a simple process. And especially with a recruiter, it's a lot of work. There are some benefits to knowing up front that company, you know, they're not the right fit for you.
Yeah. And the alternative is, so there's a risk that you'll name a number that's lower than they were going to name. There's the risk that you'll name a number that's over what they were willing to pay. And in both those cases, in one you end up with nothing, and in one you end up with less than you would have had. But the alternative is to give no number, of somehow not giving an answer to that question. But the risk then is that you could be interviewing for jobs that are well above or well below your capabilities, because salary is used as a proxy for the amount of complexity in a role. So if you have in your head, I'm going to take jobs, I want 30,000, so I'll take something between 27 and 35, or I'll look for jobs because people normally offer under the top number that they've put in an advert or that they say at the beginning. So I'll look for stuff that's 37 and then hope to get like 33. But if you've got that in your head, you don't tell the recruiter, and the recruiter sends you for an interview for a job that only pays 28 and there aren't any benefits or anything to make up the difference, or you're really set on a number and you disregard the extra benefits, then you've just wasted a whole bunch of time going for a job that is below your capabilities and below your minimum number. So the risk of saying nothing is exactly the same as the risk of naming a number.
Yeah. And you know what I always think about when I am kind of thinking about interviewing and looking for a job, on both sides, on the resume side and on the job description side, there's so many words in job descriptions and in opening descriptions and in resumes too. It's kind of like that joke we make. Those words don't mean what you think they mean.
That's true.
There's so many things that people say that make a lot of sense to them when they're describing the job or describing their resume. And hopefully we've given some really strong guidance about your resume, and you know, your resume is pretty clear, but I've been reading some people's resumes and some opening stuff lately for a friend who's looking, and you know, there's some stuff in there. I'm pretty sure that it's not clear. And if you see a description that sounds like your job, and this isn't, I'm, you know, my friend is an engineer, so there's a little more clarity, but I'm reading some of these descriptions and I'm thinking to myself, wow, you know, I know what this means, but if I hadn't been, you know, really familiar with the company or really familiar with his background, I'm not sure that someone else would understand what it means. So having an extra piece of data like that, say it says, you know, design engineer, and you know, you're looking at it and it sounds all really good, and then you look and the pay is twice what you would have expected or half of what you were expecting. That's a really good way to say, or to tell yourself, yeah, this isn't the job that I'm looking for, right? That's another piece of data that says to you that that position isn't being described well enough for you to really understand what's going on there. And that's, you know, that's a really good thing to know. And so again, this is just another piece of data. And until you have an offer, the biggest thing that you can do is collect a lot of data and give the right amount of data and the correct data to the recruiter. I mean, it's not easy, but this is another piece of data that will help you to say, yes, this job is kind of what I'm looking for or not. Because like I said, some of that stuff is, it's very nebulous. Some of those descriptions, it can be, at least in my experience.
Mm-hmm. And they don't always mean what they say they mean. So they can say 2 years experience required. And you don't have 2 years, but you have 2 years of something else that's equivalent. They don't list all of the equivalents or all of the possible ways that you can fulfill those 2 years of experience in the job description because it would take too long. But those things exist. So just because it says 2 years experience in this doesn't actually mean you have to have 2 years experience in whatever they just said. Job descriptions are complicated.
Yeah, they absolutely are. And in my experience, they're a little bit rose-colored glasses, right?
Oh, yeah. Let's describe the perfect candidate.
Right? Or you just kind of describe what you hope the role will be, right?
Yeah.
But that doesn't tell you that you're going to be sitting at your desk at 6:30 on a Tuesday night looking at a spreadsheet when you're supposed to be, you know, a design engineer. You know, I mean, it's just, it's hard because you're describing, you can't possibly describe what would go into every single day of a job. And so you're doing your best when you make the descriptions and you're doing your best when you write your resume. And again, like these other pieces of data, things like salary, location, benefits are other things that will really help you to decide because there's no way for you to look at the description and understand exactly what that means every day.
No, you're right. So the final risk with not giving a number is there's no guarantee that just because you don't give a number that they'll give you an offer that you want.
Yeah.
There's no guarantee that somehow by not going first, the offer will be what you want. In fact, by not going first, you can almost guarantee it won't be what you want because they don't know what you want. And last, in the resumes and the interview kind of section of job hunting, there are companies that won't accept resumes from recruiters who won't give a salary range, just simply because they don't want to work with people and go through the interviewing process, which is hard work for companies as well, when they can't guarantee that whatever they can offer is acceptable to you. If you think of yourself as a hiring company, if you're going to invest 10 hours interviewing a candidate you could never afford, you just don't want to do that. It's just work for no work's sake, and that shouldn't be happening anywhere in a company, especially in recruiting, when you have a good way of making sure it doesn't happen. Or maybe it's not the company policy, but you just have a hiring manager who has been burnt before and has a policy of not working with candidates for whom he doesn't know the salary range. There's hiring managers out there like that, even if the company policy is to disclose or to allow the candidate not to disclose. The hiring manager has his own rules. They all do.
Well, and partially because it's expensive just to interview people. I mean,
yeah.
There's work not being done while you're interviewing. It's expensive. It's tiring. It's stressful. There's a lot of pressure. The way I kind of think about it too sometimes is that the hiring manager has a lot of pressure on them. You know, the recruiter's probably calling them with a lot of data and they're boss or manager or their, you know, other levels, their team probably is putting pressure on them to hire someone. And then there's you. And hopefully you can make this as easy for the hiring manager as possible by providing the right amount of data and doing a great job. But the last thing that you want to do is not provide them a piece of data that could be helpful to them. Because again, you don't have anything until you have an offer.
And when it comes to risk, there's risk every which way for this question. As there is with every question, it doesn't matter what the question is, there's a risk that you're not giving the right answer or that you're giving an answer that presses some buttons from a hiring manager. I had a job once, I was just doing admin for an architecture firm and all the architectures were on the level above me and I sat in the reception office, which was a level below. And I would come upstairs and they'd give me a bunch of things to do. And I'd go, okay, no worries. And then I'd go downstairs again. And I would do the work and then I would come back out. And what do you need me to do? Anyway, this happened for a couple of days. And then one of the architects took me aside and said, Wendy, I know this is just what you're saying, but can you not say no worries? Because the last girl said that. And when she left, we found all of her work behind a filing cabinet. So there was nothing wrong with my work. There was nothing really wrong with the words I was using. It just set something off for the hiring manager. And I didn't know that. I couldn't have known that. And so there is a risk anytime you answer a question that you're going to set off one of those memories and you can't know. So
true.
There's risk everywhere. And the one way you can mitigate risk and this question is to do a lot of research into the kind of jobs that are available, the location, the company size, the job titles, the kind of pay rates that company pays compared with the rest of its kind of competitors in your area. So if you do a lot of research on salaries, you should be able to come up with a number that is fairly reasonable before you answer this question, so that way the risk is less. It's a bit like going into the supermarket and knowing that you're going to buy rice and thinking, okay, rice is between 50 cents and $1.50. if it's priced at $4, then you know something went wrong. So if you know that the job is worth between 50,000 and 70,000, you know that something is wrong if it comes either side of that. And you know that you're pretty solid in making that number, your bottom number and your top number.
The last part of our outline here is that the recruiter has a reason for asking this question. Recruiters don't work for you. They work for the company, the hiring company, and that's their client, their employer. It always reminds me of like real estate, right? Like your realtor works for the people who are selling the house. But keep in mind that the hiring company is going to pay them, right? And so that's where the money flows from. And they have to keep that in mind. That's their biggest consideration, I think, is the hiring company's wants and needs, as it should be. And so this piece of data is helpful for them because, again, they're trying to do their best for the hiring company or for the I keep wanting to say hiring manager. It's essentially the same thing, right? The manager and the organization. So they're trying to put forward candidates and people to the company that are the closest to what the company and the organization needs. And so again, this is just another way to determine whether or not you're within whatever the company's looking for. It's like, it's just economics, right? But yeah. It's so stressful for us, obviously. And of course, it should be. I mean, it should be a big deal. And it is, but for the hiring manager, consider if you did this all day long, right? It becomes a little bit, I'm sorry, for the recruiter, it becomes a little bit just math and numbers. And
oh, it absolutely is. When I went in a recruiting company, it was maths all day. They had whiteboards. It was like being in a financial company. There were whiteboards with more math than I understood on it. And if they know what the candidate wants and the salary offered is too low, the recruiter doesn't get the placement, right? Somebody else is employed and the recruiter doesn't get their cut. And believe me, they get quite upset about that. So the recruiter doesn't want a low salary, especially one that's too low for you to take, because if they do, they get no money. That's why they want to know upfront what the lowest you'll take is, so that they can only put you forward for jobs that will pay more than that. And often they only get 2-3 opportunities to put a candidate forward. So they really don't put unsuitable candidates forward for jobs, even though, I'm going to try this. There are good recruiters and bad recruiters, and I'm talking about good recruiters. If you have a bad recruiter, they could do anything for no sense at all. But we're going to try and stick to the ones that actually have some common sense. So if they put you forward for a job that won't pay more than your bottom of your range, then they won't get paid. So they don't do that.
I think there's a lot of supposition out there about recruiters, and it's one of those things where a lot of us don't understand how the recruiting process works. And it's not like it's something they teach a lot out there or tell you about. It's not that there's a lot of information floating around about it, but I think there's a lot of supposition out there, and there's a lot of like negative kind of, it's almost like, it seems like propaganda to me that, you know, if the recruiter saves the company money by getting the candidate a lower salary, then they get a cut of that or something. But the most common model for this, like the most common way that recruiters are compensated, is that they are given a percentage of the first year's salary. So it's actually in their interest to get the candidate a higher salary. I know it's like, it's not popular to say like positive things for some reason. The internet has like two sides, right? It's like everything is horrible or here's kittens. And this is kind of, guys, the answer here is kittens, right? I mean, the recruiter is hoping based on how they're compensated, not just because they're people who, you know, really have like a lot of joy in the world, although I'm sure there are recruiters out there like that, but they want to get you a higher salary because that increases their compensation. Again, just like your realtor. The realtor wants what's best for both them and the seller. And so they want to get you a higher salary.
And then, like the recruiter, they need to balance that against the hiring manager's wish to keep the salary low.
Yeah.
In other words, if a realtor prices the house too high, and the seller is very excited because they're going to get this high price. The recruiter is excited because the real estate agent is excited because they're going to get a high fee, but nobody will buy the house. Then there's no fee, right? Yeah. Because nobody will sell the house because it's overpriced. And so there's this balance that's going on all of the time. The recruiter wants the highest salary possible, but they also want to make the placement. Because unless they make the placement, they don't get the fee. And so the hiring manager is thinking, I don't want to overpay for the person. And I'm thinking about the big picture things like equality of pay across my team, equality of pay for people doing the same job in different places. I'm thinking about what I can do in terms of raises in the next couple of years. I'm thinking about the likelihood of hiring freezes, the likelihood of getting this customer or losing this customer. There's a whole bunch of things going into the hiring manager's perception, and all of that comes out in how much they want to pay. And the recruiter's job is to kind of balance those two things and find something that's acceptable to both people. So, and for the hiring manager, there's another risk, which is that if the pay requested is high, well, once they've put, you know, their entire team out of balance and, you know, that's caused a mess, but they also may have to go to their boss and say, hey, I really want this person, and they're $15,000 more than we had originally budgeted. And the boss may well say, no, that person isn't worth the extra $15,000 to us. I'd rather take someone who isn't as good, but is within budget. So there's a whole lot of balancing going on.
You can't change any of this by giving a different answer. The best thing that you can do is state your lowest number. Again, because you can't fix all of this, right? And you don't have any control over it too. Our point about accepting the risk here is a little bit like saying, you know, just get comfortable with the fact that you don't have control over the entire situation.
Yeah, it's like gambling, but not knowing any of the factors. It's like gambling on horses, but not knowing how the racetrack is, how well they've been doing, who their parents are, whatever else goes into deciding whether or not a horse will run well, who the jockey is. You don't know any of that stuff. And so the best thing to do is just to give your number. So there's three people involved, and this is where it gets complicated. So there's the candidate who wants the highest possible salary, the recruiter who wants to get the highest possible salary, but will take a lower salary if they're not going to get a placement, and the hiring manager who wants the best possible candidate for the lowest amount they can pay for those skills. And losing candidates over salary is really bad for hiring managers. It's just, I'm going to use the word embarrassing, but it's a professional miss. So they need to hire someone and they need to make that process look good. And so constantly losing people because they're offering too low a salary is a bad mark for them. So because it's so complicated, that's why we're saying just state the number.
Mm-hmm. the hiring manager, you know, they're aware of what's out there, right? They've done their research, hopefully. Probably you guys are doing the same research on what that lowest number is. You know, the way the hiring manager can kind of mitigate the fact that they might be offering too little or too much is by doing the same research that you're doing. So hopefully you can have some confidence, if you've done your thorough research, in your answer, because the data that's out there is what the hiring manager is looking at too.
The most likely outcome statistically is that everybody is slightly unsatisfied, that you don't get quite as much as you would want. The hiring manager pays a little more than they want, and the recruiter doesn't get as much as they want because there are so many competing priorities. The only way that somebody ends up in a job is that there is compromise by all three parties. And eventually, you know, if there's going to be an offer, everyone's going to know the numbers anyway. Mm-hmm. So there's no point in prevaricating. Just say it up front. And we're not telling you tell them your salary. That's a whole different question. What we're saying is tell them the range for this position, not your previous salary. That's a whole different question. And that will not necessarily be known as a part of this process and probably shouldn't be. But the range that you want for this next position, that is going to end up being known. And so you might as well say it up front.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Kate.
Thanks, Wendy.
Bye, everyone. Hope that was helpful for you. We'll be back next week with more guidance.
If you enjoyed this podcast and you want the how-tos of management wherever you are, check out the free Manager Tools mobile app. It's available on both iOS and Android devices. Go to the Apple Store or the Google Play Store and download the Manager Tools app. Just search for Manager Tools in the respective store, or go to the Manager Tools website, www.manager-tools.com, and you'll find the links on the bottom of the homepage. Once you've installed the Manager Tools app, you'll have access to all the Manager Tools and Career Tools shows anytime, anywhere you want. With easy searching of podcasts by category, using the map of the universe, or using built-in search functions, it couldn't be easier. Additionally, if you're Manager Tools personal licensee, you'll have easy access to all the show notes right from the app whenever you want. Go to the App Store and download the Manager Tools mobile app. You'll be happy you did.